Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, one of the many features of Reader Views. Hello, I'm Irene Watson, Managing Editor of Reader Views and host for today. Today I'm talking with Erland Peterson. He is the author of Rich by Choice, and Erland has an interesting story. He sold his graphics business and retired with his family to a 3.5-acre estate in Pasadena, California. And this place was complete with a swimming pool, tennis court, and the whole works. The best part, he was 40 years old. However, 4 years later, he had spent all his money and had to go back to work. Ouch, isn't that a classic story? At that time, he decided he needed to learn how to manage and invest his money. So he went into a personal money management and investment business and financial planning. This was back in 1973, and in 1983, Erland became a financial planner. In total, Erland has 32 years' experience helping people with their money, writing financial analysis, and he has given hundreds and hundreds of seminars, most at major corporations. Erland has also served on the boards of the Institute of Certified Planners and the International Association for Financial Practitioners. Recently, those two have merged and formed the Financial Planning Association, also known as FPA. Erland advises people on how to manage their income and invest their money, and when they need insurance and how much to buy and how to reduce taxes and basically anything to do with money. This is Erland's first book and is the definitive book for middle-income readers. His second book, which is Money Changes Everything, is for low-income people and who are just getting started. And his third book, The Challenge of Wealth, gives the same kind of financial advice to readers with high income and high net worth. So each of his books reads almost as if you were sitting in his office. Wow. Welcome, Erland.
Thank you, Irene.
It's quite a story, and the first thing I have to do, okay, wow, 40 years old, the American dream has come true. There you
right.
are, in this beautiful home, estate, and so on, and totally broke.
Well,
aren't you a classic story?
It took me almost 4 years to go broke.
4 years, wow, that's a long time.
Played a lot of tennis, swam with the kids in the pool.
Wow. And you all had fun.
We did.
All right. And then all of a sudden the money ran out.
Right.
Isn't that a classic story? Again. So what did you do wrong?
I didn't know how to invest. I didn't know what to do with money except to put it in the bank and spend it.
Well, isn't that most of us feel that that's what you do? I mean, we're always told, right, just from being children, you put your money in the bank. And that's it. Done.
Well.
However, you obviously have a plan for us that's different than just going to the bank and putting it into the bank. So tell me, what is the first thing that we do?
Well, a real simple point about just putting it in the bank. The bank today is paying 3, 4, maybe 5%, and inflation runs 3 or 4, sometimes 5%. So if you put your money in the bank, it's just staying even. It's not growing. You have to invest your money and make it grow. I think everybody understands, just from the last couple of years, that real estate grows in value all over the country. The prices of homes have gone up tremendously. They've doubled and tripled in many cases. And you can invest in real estate. You can invest in stocks. You can invest in mutual funds. Investing long-term where you're making 8, 10, 12%, you will soon have enough money to support yourself the rest of your life. That's what it's all about.
Well, you know, we've always been told, and this has been kind of a generational thing, I think the safest place is to put your money into the bank. So, but you're saying of all these other ways that we can actually invest and have a higher return, what is the risk of investing in what you're suggesting as opposed to going to putting the money into the bank and getting your 3%?
Well, there's no risk in the bank up to $100,000 because that's guaranteed by the federal government. But you can't live on that. And what I do, I use mutual funds, and I use the ones that are recommended by Kiplinger magazine. Every year they review about 2,500 mutual funds, and they tell what they've done for the last 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, and 10 years. And the review this year showed that there were about 170 mutual funds that averaged 10% a year or more for the last 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. Over 100 funds average 12% a year. And those 100 funds are the ones you want to invest in.
So are you suggesting also that we invest in more than one mutual fund?
Yes. As the size of your investment portfolio grows, you start with one, but then you'll get to two or three, and a typical client will have probably six good funds, could be more.
Sure. So six is actually, that would be a good place to start and actually hold it at that for until you're ready to go into more investments then.
Well, even six is enough. You can have $1 million in six funds and be quite safe and secure.
Sure, sure. So when is really a good time to start all this financial planning?
At birth? The day you take your first job and start your income. If you graduate from high school and go to work, that first year you should start some kind of an investment plan. If you go to college, when you graduate and go to work, you should start an investment plan. The ideal or one of the best ways is if the company you work for has a retirement plan, just start putting money in there every paycheck, just a few dollars, and gradually develop the plan.
Like you say, a few dollars. You know, there's an adage about the 10%. If that works, that's great. Even less than that would work. It eventually would just add up, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes. I don't tell people to do 10%. I say 4, 6, 8% is enough. And if you start that, when you're 20 or 25, you will be investing for 40 or 45 years until you're 65. And if you get the 10, 12% that I say you should get, because that's the average of the S&P 500 for the last 70 years, is 11.6%. So if you invest a little bit over your working career, you'll be able to retire at full pay and live happily for another 20 or 30 years.
You know, that just sounds so simple, and it really is, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
And you hire the managers to do the work of picking the stocks. I gave up picking individual stocks 30 years ago when I lost a whole bunch of money trying to pick stocks.
Well, obviously you're talking from experience and advising
right.
From experience, too. So I'm wondering, Erland, what about when a child is born? Isn't that really an ideal time also for the parents to start some type of a fund?
Yes, and especially if they plan to send him to college, it's a good time to start. The ideal college fund is called a 529 plan, and there are others. And, yes, you can do that. If the child doesn't go to college, you can transfer the money to another child or another relative, or you can give it to the child. If it's not used for college, it's taxable. If it is used for college, it's not taxable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at what age do you think is the most important to start talking to children about investing and about financial planning and what it really means? What money really means?
Excellent question, Irene. And I look on money as a tool, and it can do all sorts of things. It can take you to the movies. It can buy you a new car. If you invest it, you can build a plan that will support you for the rest of your life. Start talking to kids deliberately, probably in sixth or seventh grade, when it comes April 15th and you're doing your taxes, you don't have to go into the detail with your kids about what you're paying in taxes, but just mention that, hey, you know, every year we have to pay taxes. And just start talking about things. Take them into a bank and say, this is the bank. This is what we do. We've got a checking account here. We've got a savings account. This is my friend Charlie, the teller over here. And start talking to them and give them a book to read. I'm writing a book for high school students to give them all of this information. That's something I think is very important, that our high schools start teaching kids how to handle money.
No kidding. I've said that for years. There
Good
is
for
nothing.
You.
You know, they don't even learn how to write a check or balance a checkbook in school.
I know.
But they sure do learn a lot of other things that probably will never benefit them. But yet something like, you know, writing a check and balancing a checkbook is something that most kids don't know how to do unless, of course, their parents are money-wise and have taught them.
That's right. That is so sad.
Yes. Yeah. So, Erland, I understand there are about 8 million millionaires in America. How did most of these millionaires become millionaires?
A few inherited the money from their parents, you know, like the Fords and the Rockefellers. But most of them got it from building businesses. They started a business just like Bill Gates. He's a billionaire, and he started his own company years ago and worked at it and worked at it. Now, you don't have to be a computer genius to become a millionaire. You can just be a good accountant or a good engineer or good at anything and keep investing. And if you own a business and it grows, that's excellent.
Exactly. That's such a good point. The other thing you had mentioned earlier was real estate. And, you know, we've got our ups and downs. We've got our flows in real estate. And, of course, some people think it's risky. Some, you know, it's that buy low, sell high adage. Let's talk about real estate.
Okay.
How risky is it really?
Long term, I would say it's not risky. But if you were to buy a house now after the prices have just, let's say, doubled in the last 5 years and decided you just wanted to keep it for 2 years or you had to sell it in 2 years, we could be in a downtrend and you could lose money on it. On the other hand, if you buy it and move in and going to live in it for the rest of your life or for 20 or 30 years, I would say it's probably a very safe investment.
You know, it's interesting. My husband and I were talking about this the other day. We bought our first house 40 years ago that I believe we paid something like $13,000, and I believe it's on the market for something like $250,000. It's only a small house, 1,100
right.
square feet. And, you know, we've even moved from that area. But think about it, that if we would have lived in that house for these 40 years and sold it now, my goodness, that's a good investment.
It certainly is, and that story has been repeated millions of times all over the country.
Exactly, exactly. So, Erland, you have written this book, Rich by Choice, for middle-income readers. Now,
right.
What is middle income? What is the range?
Well, I would say roughly 30,000 to maybe 150 or 250,000 a year. It's not well defined, but it's the great American working middle class.
That's a big range, from 30 to 150.
Yeah.
And obviously you're talking about low income being under 30, probably more in most areas on the poverty line, really.
Well, if the minimum wage is $6 an hour and you just are working for minimum wage, you're going to make about $12,000 a year.
Yeah.
And so if you're making $6, $8, $10 an hour, you're less than $25,000 a year.
What chance is there really for these people that are only making $6 an hour? You know, $12,000, $20,000 per year, my goodness. They're just having ends meet and living from paycheck to paycheck, how can they really become rich by choice?
Well, it's tough. Okay. If your income is $20,000, well, let's say it's $1,500 a month. $1,000 a month would be minimum, but at $1,500 a month, a rule of thumb is one-third of your income goes for housing, so that would be $500 a month. You could do that. Then the other $1,000 a month is for water, gas, electricity, car payments, taxes. Uncle Sam gets his slice. Any insurance that you have, and groceries. That doesn't leave much. But if you invested $50 a month, starting when you started working, you'd be able to retire.
And you know, you are right. And it does sound simple, because $50 really a month, that's maybe, you know, $25 out of a paycheck, which is really not that much.
Right.
Even when you only get $1,000, and if that's taken right off the top and stick to it and not use it for an emergency like a movie, then, you know, the possibility is there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Of course.
And one of the advantages of the books is that they tell you that, yes, this can be done, and they show you how. The books are not just words. They have facts and figures and charts and tables and show you if you invest so much at 4% for 40 years, how much you'll have. If you invested at 8% or 12%. So the reader says, oh, these are real numbers. This can happen. It's not just a matter of a good attitude or I want to be rich someday. Someday never comes. You say, I'm going to invest $50 a month, and when I'm 60 years old, I'll have $1 million, and that will happen.
Exactly, and it does take that commitment.
Right.
And choice, commitment is a choice, isn't it?
Right, and you stick by it.
Of course, of course. And, yes, this is what I did notice about your book, which I really appreciated when I was reviewing it, that you do have charts. It's extremely reader-friendly. There's nothing, no hidden, nothing's hidden. Everything is right there, and it's, you have written it so simply. I have to commend you on that.
Thank you, thank you.
You had, just a few minutes ago, mentioned taxes. Oh, dear, we just all cringe. Starting January, we start cringing, and we're cringing until the middle of April, and then
right.
We either file taxes on the last day, last hour, or we get an extension.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Right.
Okay. I'm sure that I'm speaking for many people. So
right.
How do we actually embrace taxes?
Well, they're there. You can't make them go away, but you can reduce them. These investments that we've been talking about, Irene, our retirement funds, our personal portfolios, that money should all be tax-deferred, either in an IRA account or a 401k account at our employers or whatever is available. Your first investments long-term should all be tax-deferred, and everybody can make tax-deferred investments. So that reduces your taxes right there. That's the first step.
And that's, there again, the importance of making these investments.
Right.
And, of course, real estate, you know, there, as we know, that there's some, we can do savings on that, too, because mortgage payments are deductible, aren't they?
Yes. The interest on the mortgage payment is deductible.
The interest part, yes.
And if you and your husband had kept that first house and you sold it now, you each get a $250,000 tax deduction for the profit on the house. So if you bought that house for $13,000 and sold it for $250,000, you wouldn't owe any taxes. You
no.
Can put the $250,000 in your pocket.
Invested at 10 to 12%, actually.
Yeah, call me and I'll help you.
Okay.
Or look at my website.
And speaking of your website, what is your website?
PetersonMoneyBooks.com.
PetersonMoneyBooks.com.
And all three books are listed there.
And how simple is that? So before we close this interview, is there something that you would like to tell our listening audience, some bottom line, something that just, you know, what do they really need to do? What do they need to hear from you?
Well, I said it a couple of times, but you should be investing and expecting 10 to 12% average return on all of your long-term investments. And you also need a what I call a cash reserve for immediate expenses when you have to buy a set of tires for the car or you have a doctor bill or something. But your long-term investments should be making 10, 12% or more. If they're not, look at it, talk to your advisors, find out what's wrong, and fix it. It's available to everybody.
Erland, you do financial planning, and obviously you do consultations over the telephone or email, do you? Or do they have to be in person?
Not email. I'd be happy to talk to people, but in person is by far the best.
Of course.
But I can talk to people on the telephone.
Great, great. So they can contact you through your website. Gosh, I'm just looking at the clock. We're running out of time, and I still would have some more questions, but unfortunately we have to close this. And, gosh, it's been such a pleasure talking to you, Erland.
You too, Irene.
You've really given people a choice of what to do, you know, and like your book says, Rich by Choice, and it is a choice, and
right.
To buy your book is a choice, and I just really highly recommend it, because as I say, when I came in for a review, I grabbed it, because I just felt that there was something in there for me, and of course it did speak to me, and I'm really grateful.
Well, so, good. I agree, it's very well written. I wrote it based on spending 20 years talking to people. I knew what they would hear and understand.
And that's so important, what they can hear and what they can understand, and making it simple.
Right. There's lots of numbers in there, but you don't have to be a mathematician. The numbers are just to show you what happens.
Yes, great examples is what you've given us. So, again, thank you so much for taking this time to spend with us. And I'd like to remind our listening audience that they can link to Erland Peterson's the author's page on Inside Scoop Live, or the book review is on Reader Views. And from either of those pages, you can actually purchase Rich by Choice through Amazon.com or go to Erland's website, and I'm sure that you can make arrangements to have it purchased there too. I'm your host, Irene Watson, and thank you again for listening and supporting Erland Peterson, author of Rich by Choice. I invite you to check out our other interviews and listen in. Bye for now.
Bye.